This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. A triple suicide bombing in northeastern Nigeria's Borno State killed at least 30 people and wounded more than 40. The Nigerian government made the announcement Monday. No one claimed responsibility yet for the blast that occurred in the village of Kanduga, where residents had gathered to watch a televised football match late Sunday. Three suspects wearing suicide vests blew themselves up. Suspicion immediately fell on Boko Haram militants. Officials say the death toll was high, partly because there was not enough emergency facilities and near the village. The United States announced the deployment of 1,000 additional troops to the Middle East in response to the heightened rhetoric from Iran. It has also produced new photographs that it says show Tehran was behind the attack on a tanker ship in the streets of Hormuz last week. Iran said earlier on Monday that it will surpass within 10 days the limit on the amount of enriched uranium it is allowed to keep under the international agreement unless other nations in the agreement help it withstand the impact of U.S. economic sanctions. AP's Karen Shamus has more on that.
The development comes in the wake of suspected attacks on oil tankers last week in the region, attacks that Washington has blamed on Iran, as well as increased tensions between Iran and the U.S. The spokesman for Iran's nuclear agency, Behrouz Kamalvandi, acknowledged that the country already quadrupled its production of low-enriched uranium and said Tehran would increase uranium enrichment levels based on the country's needs. I'm Karen Shamas.
Chinese media said Monday that President Xi Jinping will make a visit to North Korea this week, the first such visit by a Chinese president in 14 years. Xi will meet with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un during the visit on Thursday and Friday. The development comes as U.S. talks with Pyongyang on its nuclear program are at an apparent standstill. This is VOA News. The U.S. voiced new support Monday for Hong Kong democracy activists, saying that they were demonstrating for basic rights. A State Department spokesman said the hundreds of thousands of street protesters were engaged in peaceful protests for things which are enshrined into basic law. The demonstrators are calling for withdrawal of a proposal to extradite criminal suspects to China for trial and the resignation of the city's pro-Beijing leader, Carrie Lam. Authorities reopened roads Monday near government headquarters. The roads were closed for Sunday's march that drew nearly 2 million protesters clad in black and marching against the extradition bill. Lam suspended the bill on Saturday, but protesters say they will continue until it is permanently revoked. The founder of Chinese telecom giant that has been blacklisted by Washington is now speaking out, AP correspondent Matt Small.
Huawei's founder says it never occurred to the Chinese telecom company that the United States would be so determined to take extreme measures against it. Ren Zhongfei believes both sides will suffer and no one will win, adding the company's revenues will be $30 billion less than forecast over the next 2 years. And while it'll cut back capacity, he insists that restrictions put in place last month by the federal government, in his words, will not stop us. U.S. officials have accused Chinese telecom companies like Huawei of stealing trade secrets and threatening cybersecurity, possibly on orders of the ruling Communist Party. Matt Small, Washington.
The Supreme Court is throwing out an Oregon ruling against bakers who refuse to make a wedding cake for a lesbian couple, AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani.
The Oregon court had ruled against the bakers before the Supreme Court ruled during its last term in favor of a Colorado baker in a similar case. The High Court's now telling Oregon judges to take another look. That keeps the high-profile case off the justices' election year calendar, but the bigger issue of balancing the rights of LGBT people and religious objections from merchants remains unresolved. Another case involving a florist who would not handle arrangements for a same-sex wedding is heading to the Supreme Court. Sagar Magani, Washington.
As President Trump's second press secretary, Sarah Sanders, prepares to leave office, her predecessor, Sean Spicer, tells VOA that the regular White House news briefing should absolutely return. He spoke to VOA Monday. He said the briefings are an opportunity for people to see the government in action and capture media attention in a way that nothing else does. White House had not held a news briefing in more than 3 months. Sanders, who is leaving at the end of the month, says she and other Trump administration officials make sure they are frequently available to media despite the lack of formal briefings. Find more at voanews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, June 18th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Kenyan health authorities say the country is free from Ebola.
As a ministry, we remain committed to ensuring that relevant surveillance measures are in place to safeguard the health of all Kenyans and our visitors.
Cecily Kariuki is a Kenyan health minister. Botswana has a new political party out of a feud between the current president and his predecessor. Ethiopia plans to privatize key state enterprises. Sierra Leone's anti-corruption commission recovers another $800,000 of stolen public funds. And a former Sierra Leone vice president accuses President Madabio's government of unprovoked violence.
The present government of President Madabio continues to be very violent, with no respect to human dignity, and also contravening with Section 18 of the 1991 Constitution of Sierra Leone, which guarantees citizens' freedom of movement.
That's former Sierra Leone Vice President Sam Sumana, and employees of a Juba-based security firm go on strike to demand pay in U.S. dollars. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Former President Mohamed Morsi, the country's first democratically elected head of state, who was later ousted from power, collapsed and died during a court session. Officials said the 67-year-old had just addressed the court in Cairo during his trial on espionage charges when he collapsed on Monday. They said Morsi spoke for 5 minutes from the glass cage. He is kept in during the trial and a few minutes later fell to the ground. State television said Morsi was taken to the hospital but was dead on arrival. Kenya has deployed medical officers on its border with Uganda as well as at the Jomo Kenyatta International Airport to monitor Ebola status. This after a 36-year-old woman who had traveled from the border with Uganda displayed some signs of the deadly disease. As Maureen Odhiambo reports from Nairobi, Health Cabinet Secretary Cecily Kariuki said the patient has tested negative of the virus.
After a whole day of country's panic after a suspected case of the deadly viral hemorrhage fever, Kenya's Health Cabinet Secretary Cecil Kariuki declared Kenya Ebola-free after the woman who was suspected to have the virus tested negative. Speaking in Nairobi, Kariuki said the government has deployed a special team of health workers to the country's points of entry for screening of persons getting into the neighboring countries, especially from Uganda and Democratic Republic of Congo.
I wish to further confirm that the ministry has a total of 259 staff deployed at the various ports of entry. As a ministry, we remain committed to ensuring that relevant surveillance measures are in place to safeguard the health of all Kenyans and our visitors.
Kenya is at risk of its people contacting the deadly Ebola virus, especially at the borders of Busia and Malaba, after two deaths were reported in Uganda. Kericho Governor Paul Chepkwonyi, whose county reported the suspected case, said that his county is vigilant and that the suspected patient and three others who were isolated at the hospital are not suffering from the Ebola.
We wish to state that the patient is free of Ebola and other hemorrhagic fevers. But as a county, we remain vigilant for any suspected cases,
even if it ended up being Ebola.
Kenya has been on the forefront in fight against Ebola and had back in the days sent some health workers to Liberia when there was an outbreak to learn how to handle the situation in case of the epidemic. Ms. Kariuki, however, says in case of an Ebola outbreak in the country, Kenya is ready to handle the situation.
It will be remembered that Kenya contributed to fighting Ebola in Liberia some years back by getting some of our HR attached in Liberia. They have since come back and they have joined my team in the ministry. Facilities for isolation of any suspected cases, case management and infection prevention and control exists in our major facilities, including Kenyatta National Hospital here here at the Jomo Kenyatta International Airport, among others, for isolation and management of any suspected cases.
Already, the Democratic Republic of Congo has reported hundreds of deaths due to the virus. According to the scientist, the virus is passed from human to human through contact, and even the burial of persons who died from Ebola are conducted without coming to contact with the body of the dead, which one can also contract the disease. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiombo in Nairobi, Kenya.
Sierra Leone National Police say they are committed to maintaining the safety and security of the state. This after former Vice President Samuel Sam Sumana's party accused security forces of terrorizing the former Vice President and his supporters as Mr. Sumana returned to the country. But the police said they fired tear gas to disperse a crowd that had planned to hijack an event that the Vice President was to participate in to the disapproval of the police. But the former Vice President says the police used unprovoked violence.
The essence here is that not too long ago, the former President of Sierra Leone was also visiting that same city, Port Harcourt, and he was also intercepted by the police. And before that, when I came to Sierra Leone one year ago, the same thing happened, and there's a continuous police brutality, abusing the right of the citizens in terms of safety. At the same time, looking at us, where we are coming from, as a post-conflict country, we believe that we should be very particular of sustaining or managing the fragile democracies that we have. But the president's government under the SFPP party of President Madabio continues to be very violent, with no respect to human dignity, and also contravening with Section 18 of the 1991 Constitution of Sierra Leone, which guarantees citizens' freedom of movement. The world should not stand by and see our fragile peace degenerate again in the hands of a leader who is not ready to seek the peace and quiet of our country.
We have a statement here from the police that you left Longi Airport with 20-vehicle convoy with the intention of addressing a political rally. First of all, did you tell the police that you were going to do this?
To start with, there was no rally. Absolutely, there was no rally. Let them tell us where the people had gathered to say there was a rally. There was no rally. I had no plans, and there was nobody gathered nowhere to say a rally. We came through with a convoy of my supporters that had gone to the airport to receive me. So it's a blatant lie that the police lied, and it's not true. We had no confrontation with them. In fact, when we arrived, I stopped and spoke with them. There was no rally. That's totally it's false.
Well, the police said they had to intercept your convoy because you still entered the city, although they told you not to.
No, there is no law in Sierra Leone that you are supposed to travel with X amount of vehicles. There is no emergency that would deny me of the number of vehicles that I can travel with. In my convoy or wherever vehicles that were when I left the airport, I don't even know the number because these are my fans, these are my supporters that came out in their numbers to receive me.
The statement we got from a member of your party suggesting that unbelievable terrorism against you, the incident you just described, do you think this is terrorism?
Well, I refer to be terrorizing me because this is against my civic rights. I mean, there is no reason why for me, as a former vice president, came into the country, then they have to stop me. And there's no reason that they should intimidate me. So it's very clear. You refer to it as terrorism. It can be an act of violence and intimidation against a civilian.
Mr. Former Vice President, thank you very much for speaking with us on Daybreak Africa.
Thank you very much.
Former Sierra Leone Vice President Samuel Sam Sumana under President Ernest Bai Koroma before he was sacked in 2015. He's speaking with us from the capital of Freetown. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butt in Washington. Today is Tuesday, June 18th. Daybreak Africa time is now 14 and a half minutes past the hour. Civilian's Anti-Corruption Commission on Monday presented to President Julius Maada Bio a check for 7.5 billion leones, an equivalent of $800,000 recovered from stolen public funds. Last year, the commission presented another $800,000 to the president. Commission Chair Francis Ben Kaifala says the commission currently has over 50 corruption cases in court, but he says the $800,000 was recovered through what he called non-conviction assets recovery approach.
Today we handed over to the president of Sierra Leone a check of 7.5 billion leones as a second tranche of commitment for us at the ACC to recover stolen funds or funds lost to corruption so that we can build a state-of-the-art diagnostics center in Sierra Leone for our citizens.
So, Mr. Chairman, where did you get this money?
We try to balance two things at the Anti-Corruption Commission in Sierra Leone. That is conviction-based recovery, which is, in other words, called fines, which the courts impose. And we have scored enormous success in that regard. But these monies are particularly coming from non-conviction-based asset recovery. That is the situation where we don't have to go to court. We go after monies that have been stolen by corrupt public officials. We recover them, and once we recover them, we transfer them back into the consolidated fund so that it can be plowed into the economy to provide social services for the people. So that is where this money is coming from. This money are cash recovered from corrupt public officers that is given back to the people of Sierra Leone.
In order to collect the money or recover the money, did you bring these people to court or did they voluntarily give you this money?
There are those we take to court. We have over 50 cases in court right now. We have about 19 to 20 convictions of public officers. That is one tool used at the Anti-Corruption Commission. This one is a non-conviction-based asset recovery approach. After we investigate and we identify that a public officer has stolen X amount of money, or due to his actions, the country lost X amount of money, we face the public official with the evidence and give him the alternative to pay back or face prosecution. So we have been very successful in that regard because either way is not good for the public official. Our conviction rate in court is very high. I mean, since I came to office, only one case has been lost. So if you choose to go to court, we are still ready to go with you. But this recovery is basically based on those who look at it and say, okay, we'll pay back the full amount of money that you have found out as a commission that we are entitled to pay. Most of them committed to paying. Within 1 year, somebody will say, okay, I will pay back 3 billion euros. I will pay back 4 billion euros. I will pay back 1 billion euros. I will pay back 800 million euros as the case may be. So the actual money that has been collected is what the 16 billion euros is. This 7.5 check we gave, in December last year, if you can remember, we gave another 7.5 billion to the president. So we've given another 7.5 billion to the president. The Anti-Corruption Commission is mandated by law to keep 10% of that recovery to support our operations so that we can be able to be more efficient in our work, to cushion the deficits that we may have from budget allocations. So 10% goes back to us. But in everything, the total commitment that public officers are to pay back within the next 6 months, in addition to the 16 billion, is over 21 billion euros. But this 16 billion is what we have actually recovered, cash that is with us, that we are now handing over to the people of Sierra Leone.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. It's always nice to talk with you.
Thank you very much, sir. I'm always happy to talk to you.
Francis Ben Kaifala is the new head of Sierra Leone's Anti-Corruption Commission. He was speaking with me from the capital of Freetown. In Botswana, a new political party has been formed from the ongoing feud between President Mokgweetsi Masisi and his predecessor, Sarese Kama. The Botswana Democratic Party, the BDP, a newly registered breakaway party from the ruling Botswana Democratic Party, recently held a meeting in the capital, Gaborone. Biggi Butale is the interim president of the newly registered opposition Botswana Democratic Party.
The meeting went very well. We had representatives from all the 57 constituencies in Botswana. And at that meeting, we were given a green light to go ahead and register the party for the upcoming elections, which we are currently doing. We are hoping that we will get a lot of members resigning from the ruling party in the coming days and weeks.
So what informed the decision to break away from the ruling party to form this new party?
Basically, I think there was a lot of conflict and uncertainty. If you remember, in April last year, the ruling party ushered in a new president. And basically, from day one, really, The relationship between the current president, Dr. Masisi, and the outgoing president, Lieutenant General Khama, has never been that good. And because of that, it has endangered a lot of instability in the party, a lot of uncertainty, resulting in what seems to be like a sidelining of any member of parliament or member of the party that seems to be friends or supporting the former president.
So basically, this new party was formed due to the feud between the outgoing president, Tsarete Khama, Ian Khama, and current president, Masisi. Why wouldn't this be resolved by the elders? Because some people are saying that the new party was as a result of this tension or issues.
The elders in the party tried, but for some of us, we thought that the elders were not totally impartial. It did seem at times as if they were partial towards the current president. But even over and above the tensions between the two leaders, the current president also did not quite seem ready to embrace anybody that he felt was not supporting him fully. He seems to develop an attitude of, you are either with me 100% or you are against me 100%. And this perception also fueled the already existing tensions and instability in the party.
What do you think your chances are, realistically speaking, ahead of the upcoming elections? Because you know there have been a lot of opposition parties proving a significant challenge to the ruling party due to the dominance of the ruling party. So what chances do you have realistically, really?
We've got 3 months to the next elections. And if we didn't have 3 months to the next elections, if we had at least 6 months, I would tell you that we're going to be the ruling party in 6 months. Recognizing our time constraints, what I can assure you is that we are going to get into an understanding and agreement with the main opposition party, the UDC. And I can tell you that come October, come election time, the ruling party will be in opposition.
Biggie Butale is the interim president of the newly registered opposition, Botswana Democratic Party. He spoke with viewers Peter Clote from the capital, Habaruni. Ethiopia's finance minister says the government is preparing to privatize some state-owned entities. However, the plan to sell off parts of the country's once-guarded crown jewels is getting a mixed reaction. Sarah Kimani reports from Addis Ababa.
At a corner of Ethiopian Airlines complex in Addis Ababa sits a DC-3 jet, a constant reminder of the milestones that Africa's most successful national carrier has made since its first international flight 73 years ago. Now the airline is seeking a partner as part of Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's plans to privatize some of the country's state-owned entities. Ethiopia's Finance Minister Ahmed Shide explains.
In the past, we have been actively involved in the economic affairs, but now we are rebalancing. We need to facilitate the sustainability of growth. We will partially privatize four of state-owned enterprises: telecom, aviation, energy, and logistics as well.
One of the crown jewels, state monopoly Ethiotelcom, has a customer base of 65 million people. The finance minister says those numbers should be enough to whet any investor's appetite.
The most important initiative is the market potential itself. This is growing big market potential in many areas. So that is the most important thing. But we are also revising a lot of laws and procedures on customs as part of ease of doing business.
Some companies say the decision to open Ethiopia's markets could not come at a better time. Dario Wilson is the managing director of East African Bottling Share Company, a subsidiary of Coca-Cola.
I think the opening up of the economy will bring a whole lot of additional benefits as well. Like, one of our biggest challenges at the moment is just, you know, access to forex and dollars. I think when it opens up, if it opens up and how it opens up, it will be beneficial to all the players within that operate within Ethiopia.
Not everyone is convinced that privatization is the best path forward. Getacho Alemu, an investments and development consultant based in Addis Ababa, says the country's economic problems will not be solved through privatization.
There are serious concerns about the decision itself and the process by which it's being implemented, the pace of implementing the policy, as well as other related issues like accountability, and transparency and the future of these sectors.
He also says there needs to be a regulatory framework in place to ensure that shares of the state-owned enterprises are not sold for less than their worth. Sarah Kimani for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
Employees of a Juba-based South Sudan security firm have gone on strike, insisting to be paid in U.S. dollars, not the local currency. The head of WS Insight Limited Security says all the guards working for his firm are paid in the local currency. Winnie Cirino has more from Juba.
Diku Asin, a WS Insight guard assigned to work at the United Nations mission in South Sudan, says he and other employees have repeatedly raised complaints to management about not being paid in US dollars as promised in their contract. He says the employees have agreed to go on strike until they get paid in US dollars.
What we want is what is indicated in the contract form. That is what we demand. We do not demand for increment, but we demand for our right, what is in the contract form. To make the matter worse, we have been peaceful.
Diku says the security firm expelled him and other colleagues for allegedly spearheading the strike. James DeBoer, who also is employed by Insight as a guard and assigned to the United Nations mission in South Sudan, says managers have been insulting the employees, saying they are not educated and should not be paid in dollars. He says the exchange rate for South Sudanese pounds into dollars at a bank is extremely low.
The country manager is calling us illiterate, that he cannot pay us dollar. And he has given us the contract in dollar. And we decided to say this is inhumanity of working day and night. We cannot able to pay our children for school. We cannot able to achieve our basic need while we are working. So that is our grievance.
Tony Sugden, chairman of WS Insight Limited, insists his employee contracts do not specify getting paid in US dollars.
The contract is very specific that they will be paid in pounds. So it's very hard for us to argue something that we know not to be true.
Sugden says he was surprised to see the guards going on strike without engaging the administration in any dialogue. He says the employees are illegally striking because they are supposed to follow procedures in the Labor Act 2017, which says they should form a national employees union that should negotiate with the management, and if their issues cannot be resolved, to later petition the Minister of Labour to intervene. He says Insight has every right to pay employees in pounds.
The principal reasons why we pay in South Sudanese pounds is because we are a locally incorporated entity. We are a South Sudanese company, and in South Sudan, the legal tender is SSP. That is the local currency.
On Saturday, staff members went on strike demanding their payment in dollars. Sugden says the company has more than 5,000 employees across the country, and if all of them were paid in dollars, it would hamper the economy of the country. Sugden says the only way to resolve the issue is for the employees to return to work. He says once that happens, company managers will be happy to negotiate with them. For VOA News, I am Winnie Cirino in Juba.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of African news. Egypt's former president, Mohamed Morsi, the country's first democratically elected head of state, who was later ousted from power, collapsed and died during a court session. Officials said the 67-year-old had just addressed the court in Cairo during his trial on espionage charges when he collapsed on Monday. They said Morsi spoke for 5 minutes from the glass cage he is kept in during the trial, and a few minutes later fell to the ground. State television said Morsi was taken to the hospital but was dead on arrival. Morsi, long a top figure in the Islamic group, the Muslim Brotherhood, was overthrown as president in 2013 by Egypt's military after mass protests against his rule. That is it for this Tuesday, June 18th edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Botti in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good day.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 2230 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com. We'll be right back.